Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I've got a couple audio clips that I'd like to play for you from two different programs that aired in the last week. One from Dr. Dobson's Focus on the Family. We just have a few seconds of audio off of that. And another from Hugh Hewitt. Hugh Hewitt is probably the nation's number one largest Christian call-in talk show host on Salem Radio Network. Salem used to be a Christian network, then they went public. Now they're explicitly, they're not Christian. And they're Republican, though. They defend the Republican candidate, whoever he might be. But Dr. Dobson was recently inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame. And he chose Hugh Hewitt to be the one. He states that he could invite anybody he wanted to make the induction, to introduce him at the event. And he chose Hugh Hewitt. And during their program, their few comments, Hugh Hewitt asked Dr. Dobson about the state of the church and if the church is using its ability to influence our culture the way we should be. And Dr. Dobson makes this comment about Proposition 8 in California, and that, you know, we won that battle. And what's astounding then, first, is that he chooses Hugh Hewitt, and then Hugh Hewitt does a program, a segment of his daily radio show, about the future of the Republican Party and conservatism, and he has on a guest, Glenn Reynolds, who is called the Instapundit, and Glenn Reynolds, you'll hear him make a recommendation. He suggests that we should be willing to compromise on the places we need to compromise, and he suggests we should compromise on gay marriage. As conservatives, the future of the Republican Party, we should be happy to have an America full of gay marriages. That should be fine as long as we get a trade-off of some type. And for example, he uses a Second Amendment's right kind of trade-off. So let's listen to these, and I'm playing these to show where we're at. Hugh Hewitt, I interviewed Hugh Hewitt when he was on the floor of the Democratic National Convention, was it, in New York City a few years ago. And I asked him, Hugh, if Rudy Giuliani ended up being the nomination of the Republican Party, would you support him? Oh, absolutely I'd support him. I asked him about our godless public education. I asked him about issue after issue, and he held a secular humanist, moral relativist, Republican hack position. That was his bottom line. His bottom line is you don't compromise on Republican Party politics. Everything else, including God's enduring commands, do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, they're all negotiable regarding public policy. So let's hear a couple of these quotes, and then we'll talk through. And here's our phone number here at Bob Enyart Live, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. We'll talk through this issue of the future of the body of Christ and what do we have to do to educate Christians to be an influence in our culture, and what do we need from our Christian leaders. If we hold up people like Hugh Hewitt as people who are going to help us steer the moral future of our country, I think we're in trouble. So let's hear this. Let's go first to the clip from Focus on the Family from November 24th.
Welcome to Focus on the Family with psychologist for the National Radio Hall of Fame event.
We had our choice of anyone who would be here to introduce me during the event to follow. You were my first choice.
In terms of the church's opportunity in the world, you know, when some doors are closed, others open, has the church grasped new media's ability yet to go out and influence this world? Do you think that we've quite got it yet? Are we doing all that we can?
That we sure got it in California on Tuesday. I've been very disappointed in the church's response to the moral issues the cultural moral issues through the years, and have whined about that a lot. But I tell you, marriage amendment in the state of California, as liberal as California is.
Okay, so Dr. Dobson points out, as liberal as California is, and it's liberal, Proposition 8, the marriage amendment, wins overwhelmingly, overwhelmingly, as it has been doing in state after state around the country. So even if you were amoral, if you couldn't care less about God or his enduring commands, or that he made us male and female, or that homosexuality destroys people, and if you love your neighbor, you'll warn them against homosexual behavior, even if you couldn't care less about that, if the only thing you cared about is getting votes, the only thing, and building a coalition, a political coalition, you would want to push the opposition against homosexual marriage because it's a net vote getter. I mean, even Barack Obama said that he is against homosexual marriage. I mean, he may be lying, but that's his position. And so John McCain, against homosexual marriage. Barack Obama, against homosexual marriage. Now we're going to hear on Hugh Hewitt's radio program, Hugh Hewitt's radio program, within 7 days of that broadcast on Focus on the Family, we're going to hear Hugh Hewitt interviewing a guest, Glenn Reynolds, about the future of conservatism in the Republican Party. And Glenn Reynolds, in the whole segment, the whole interview, he only makes one substantive suggestion. He talks about we have to be willing to compromise. We got to know where to compromise. We have to be satisfied. We have to see the glass is half full. And he suggests we should be willing to compromise. He said, here's my opinion on homosexual marriage. We should be satisfied with a nation filled with homosexual gay couples that are married as long as we get our Second Amendment rights. And so if the motivation was getting votes, you would want to continue your opposition to gay marriage. But Hugh Hewitt has a conservative pundit on the future of the Republican Party, Republican strategist, who's just prepping Christians for this continual slide into moral relativism. So let's hear this from Hugh Hewitt back just a couple weeks ago.
Morning, glory to be grace, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Pleased to welcome back to the program. Don't those points of unity inevitably divide, though, Glenn Reynolds, in terms of the social cons and the libertarians on things like same-sex marriage, protecting the unborn, those sorts of things?
Well, you know, it really depends on how people choose to look at it. I mean, I've always described my political philosophy by saying I'd be happy to see an American full of happily married gay couples with closets full of assault rifles. Now, if you choose to look at that, if you're a social con, you can look at that as glass half full or glass half empty, I guess. I've always felt that you advance your issues by finding places you can agree with people and working together. And, you know, maybe that's just a Tennessee thing, but that's sort of what I think.
Now, how many of the people participating in this conversation about conservatism 2.0, because you talked to Huckabee and obviously you and Michelle were doing debating, are party leadership?
Okay, so Hugh Hewitt goes on, doesn't even pause, doesn't even say, wait a minute, Glenn, you're suggesting to my audience that we compromise on homosexual marriage? You're suggesting, I mean, that should have been like dropping an atom bomb in Hugh Hewitt's studio. He should have said, wait a minute, I thought you were a conservative. Not even Barack Obama favors homosexual marriage. Not even Obama. You want to move the body of Christ, the Christian voters in my audience, you want to move them to the left of Barack Obama and have them embrace homosexual marriage for additional Second Amendment rights? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And so our Christian leaders do not hold one another accountable. They give one another a pass on almost everything regarding political, moral issues. Almost everything. Like Billy Graham, his Billy Graham Christian Workers Handbook, where in multiple editions, year after year, he include statements saying that as Christians, we should accept abortion for rape and incest. We should accept abortion if the baby is severely disfigured or handicapped. And does Billy Graham get challenged by our other Christian leaders saying, what are you talking about? We don't kill a child because he's handicapped. We don't kill a baby because his father's a criminal. And so we have today millions of Christians in the body of Christ, actual Christians, that think killing kids is okay in various circumstances. Millions, because they've been hearing that from their leaders in their national ministries. And they listen to, they think Bill O'Reilly, or really O'Reilly, is a conservative. They think that. He's pro-abortion, pro-homosexuality, anti-death penalty, pro-evolution. They think that Sean Hannity is a Christian leader, or Hugh Hewitt is a Christian leader, or Dennis Prager, or Michael Medved. It's startling. Now, let's hear a shorter version of that, the clip we just heard, because just notice that Hugh Hewitt's guest, Glenn Reynolds, Instapundit, and he's on the internet with Michelle Malkin, and they're talking about conservatism 2.0, and their discussion is, hey, we need the Republican Party to be a big tent. We need that. So we need homosexuals in the Republican Party. And we need pro-choicers in the Republican Party. And so we have to not be so rigid on minor issues like do not murder and God made them male and female. And so when Glenn Reynolds mentions homosexual marriage and Second Amendment rights, and we should be satisfied with compromise, then we go right to Hugh Hewitt's completely avoiding the issue. Let's hear this shorter clip.
I've always described my political philosophy by saying I'd be happy to see an American full of happily married gay couples with closets full of assault rifles.
Now, how many of the people participating in this conversation about conservatism 2.0?
Okay, so Hugh Hewitt is an example of a virtually amoral conservative leader who's viewed as a Christian leader, who is looked up to as, what, an anchor for the culture? And increasingly, Hugh Hewitt increasingly is advocating immoral positions. And, in fact, he told us here at Bob Inert Live that, of course, I would support Rudy Giuliani if he's the party's nominee. Of course I would. Of course I would. And I would teach as many Christians as I could to support a mass murderer because, Bob, you don't understand. Republican mass murderers are more desirable than Democratic mass murderers. And this country will be better off if we teach millions of Christians to compromise on everything, on absolutely everything, except for Republican Party politics. That's the only thing we need to be loyal to, ultimate loyalty to the Republican Party candidate, even if it requires lying about his positions, even if it requires deceiving others, just be loyal. So our phone number here at Bob Inert Live is 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. So when I interviewed Hugh Hewitt, I asked him a series of simple questions, and it was somewhat startling. He was on the floor of the convention, and the questions I asked him were designed to see if he had a Christian worldview. And he didn't hesitate. He did not hesitate to answer each question. And it was somewhat startling and culminated. Well, for example, is there any problem with a godless public schools? Is that a problem? Is that something we should oppose, that our public schools are officially godless? No, that's not a problem. So if you have a Christian leader who defends godless education for children, you're pretty much in big trouble. So our phone number here is 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. Let's go to Denver. Dave, welcome to Bob Inert Live.
Hey, Bob, aren't you expecting a little too much out of Hugh Hewitt? I mean, his brain turned to mush a long time ago when he was a lawyer in Washington, D.C.
Ah, you don't like lawyers, Dave.
I don't.
Yeah. You know, 99% of lawyers give the other 1% a bad rap. Bad reputation. Yeah, it's a tragedy. And, you know, lawyers in America, even Christian lawyers, are taught to abide by the process regardless. And so our Christian lawyers are taught, they're actually taught to be moral relativists.
Like Jay Sekulow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. All right, so Dave, those two clips, to me, help to put very succinctly the state we're in, the state in the body of Christ, where Dr. Dobson airs this introduction he got from Hugh Hewitt, his number one choice to be inducted in the National Radio Hall of Fame. Hugh Hewitt and Dr. Dobson are lamenting the state of the church and its influence on the culture, and you can't have two bigger examples of millions of Christians being taught to compromise on the most fundamental matters of do not murder and do not commit adultery.
Like, we have met the enemy, and he is us.
Yeah, I think so. All right, hey, thank you so much, Dave.
God bless you, Bob.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. So I remember asking Hugh Hewitt about big government spending, and I argued with him, showing that the Republicans have outspent the Democrats with Republican administrations and every administration since World War II. And what was his response to that? I have a hard time remembering his response to that, but it's hard to disagree with that. I talked to Hugh Hewitt about the Bush doctrine. You don't harbor a terrorist. If you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist. And he agreed, and I agreed, that's a great doctrine. And then I said, Hugh, George W. Bush is giving Yasser Arafat's Palestinian Authority millions and millions of dollars. And they've recognized that organization as a terrorist organization. So we're not only harboring terrorists, we're funding terrorists. And, of course, Hugh Hewitt supported that. And I asked him, do you think the Republican Party should have a major national push to put God back in the center of education? He said, no, definitely not. And on and on. And finally, what do you think about Rudy Giuliani? If he's the party's nominee, would you support him? Oh, absolutely. And so what is the standard? There is no standard. There is no standard. Now, today is World AIDS Day. Right? Today's World AIDS Day. And we have, well, the Associated Press has an article out about the AIDS industry and how many are saying that it's become so big and it's so money hungry that it's outlived its purpose and it should be disbanded. They actually quote a Roger England. And this is on Google News. This was on the Drudge Report with a think tank in the Caribbean. And Roger England argues that the United Nations AIDS agency that's leading the fight against AIDS worldwide has outlived its purpose and should be disbanded. And he says that the global HIV industry, now make a comparison of this to what we've been saying about national right to life and these national pro-life ministries that are bloated and counterproductive. Roger England is reported as saying the global HIV industry, notice he calls it an industry, and we call national right to life and Focus on the Family and Jay Sekulow and Americans United for Life, it's the pro-life industry, raising $250 million in their partial birth abortion effort, even though that ban never had the authority to stop a single abortion, not one. For 15 years, Christians were misled. And that ban was finally passed. It's the law of the land, and not one abortion was ever canceled, not one, because of the partial birth abortion ban. Yet the pro-life industry raised $250 million, $250 million over 15 years, wasted 15 years, wasted. And after we began to expose this with our full-page open letters, newspaper ads to Dr. Dobson, he wrote in his newsletter that it is true, ending partial birth abortion does not save a single human life. So what did we do for 15 years? So Roger England, with today being World AIDS Day, says the global HIV industry is too big and out of control. We have created a monster with too many vested interests and reputations at stake. Too many relatively well-paid HIV staff and too many rock stars with AIDS support as a fashion accessory. He wrote this in the British Medical Journal. And Roger England argues that we should close down UNAIDS. Close down UNAIDS. And what, they have a budget of $200 million annually. That's about double Focus on Families, $200 million annually. And he said we could use that money for other problems such as pneumonia, which kills more children every year than AIDS, malaria, and measles combined. And it's pretty interesting. They go on through this article, the Associated Press, and they quote, well, here they have John Oldfield, executive vice president of Water Advocates. They promote clean water and sanitation. And he says diarrhea kills 5 times as many kids as AIDS. Diarrhea kills 5 times as many kids as AIDS, said John Oldfield with Water Advocates out of Washington, D.C. And he says everybody talks about AIDS at cocktail parties, but nobody wants to hear about diarrhea. You know, I think he's right there. I think he's right. And he said, I don't want to see the cause of AIDS harmed, but for AIDS to crowd out other issues is ethically unjust. Now, that's an interesting conversation. But do you notice a similarity? Do you notice a similarity that people who fight a cause could end up getting big and bloated and fight the cause and lose sight of the cause? That we're trying to save innocent lives and could become relatively comfortable in the battle? And what if the battle's never won? Well, what's my pension like? What kind of an office do I have? What's my weekly salary? And so we have, think about the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. Now, that's a good one. The Born Alive Infant Protection Act. We, the pro-life movement, worked on that for some years. And that was a law that said that if the baby survives an abortion, you can't kill it. And Barack Obama, he opposed that law, and he became president. And then we have the partial birth abortion ban. Let's take those two examples, right? And the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, that was worked on for some years out of Chicago. Jill Stanek was very involved in that. And she's a pro-life columnist. And if you compare the goal of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act with the practical results, it had two goals. Save kids, right? If they survive the abortion, we want to save kids. And two, harm the political career of politicians who would oppose it. So Barack Obama was the most visible opponent of the Born Alive Act, and he was elected president. So sadly, that second goal failed. But how about the first goal, to save kids? Well, the practical result, and this is what happens when you lose sight of your fundamental principles and you attempt strategies based on, well, what are our chances of winning? What are our chances of winning? Those are the only battles we're willing to fight, the ones that we think we could win. So the practical results of the Born Alive Act, and some of this that I'm about to say is indisputable, is that the abortionist now makes absolutely certain that he kills the baby. That's the most significant practical result. It cleans up the image of the abortion industry. They're no longer dealing with kids who survive the abortion that they have to kill. So the image of the abortion industry has been cleaned up as far as their ongoing practice. It enabled pro-abortion politicians to vote yes to improve the abortionist reputation. It provided cover for liberal politicians who support it to show that they're not extreme. NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, they gave no opposition because this pro-life action improves abortion's survivability. It makes abortion look more humane. It squandered the blood of children killed after birth by passing a law that saves no kids. It distracted from the essential effort to recognize the God-given right to life of the unborn. And the baby's death now is quicker. The babies now die more quickly and likely more violently. And finally, fewer kids live with the Born Alive Infant Protection Act because those who would survive now have no chance. All right, let's go to Alabama. Sherry, real quick, we're almost out of time. Hi, Sherry.
Hey, Bob, I wanted to know, how do you train your boys only to cry when they get hurt?
What a great question. We teach our kids, well, I'll give you one example. If you ask your child to do something and they say no, we teach them that no means I want a spanking now.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's okay. One example. Now, we teach our kids you can only cry when you get hurt or someone else gets hurt. If they cry because they can't play a game or because they lost, an easy way to get them to stop crying is to give them a spanking. We give them a spanking, and it doesn't have to be a hard spanking, but we give them a spanking and tell them you can only cry if you are hurt or someone else is hurt. And you know what, Sherry? I have found that the kids learn that lesson. And our kids, we've raised 7 boys, Cheryl and I. I think I give less than 1 spanking a year.
Wow.
And that's how fun and enjoyable it is to spend time with our kids.
And you think it'll work with girls, too?
I only have raised boys, Sherry.
I have 3 little girls.
Oh, boy. We've raised 7 boys, you know. I don't have the heart to spank a daughter. It's a good thing I didn't have any. But, Sherry, I think it would work with girls, too.
Okay.
Hey, report back, all right? Let us know.
I'll see what I can do.
All right. God bless you. Thanks for the call. Okay. Hey, we have a DVD. If you're a new listener to Bob and Yurt Live, we will send this to you absolutely for free, including shipping and handling. It's the Bible Tour of Israel. Study the Bible on location with Bob and Yurt Live. Just call us, 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278. Give us your name, address. Give us your information. We will send you this DVD, A Bible Tour of Israel, to thank you for tuning in if you're a new listener. And, hey, Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school.